Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. Sudanese activists are calling on the international community to protect civilians trapped across cities in Sudan.
Well, when the war is started, the crime committed everywhere is Sudan. But we actually are very concerned about West Darfur and the Niana, Kutum, and all this, the Ninja, and all this area. There is a big challenge.
And authorities in South Sudan's Unity State jailed two gunmen for looting returnees.
They looted some property from the civilian new king of Atum. All those property have been returned back to the rightful owners.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A UK-based group is urging the international community to maintain its focus on crimes against civilians occurring in Sudan's ongoing conflict. Nabil Biagio spoke with Abdallah Idris, the director of the Darfur Diaspora Association in the United Kingdom. Last week, his team visited the International Criminal Court in The Hague to discuss with officials the past and ongoing crimes against civilians in Darfur and other parts of Sudan.
We discussed all with the prosecutor office, and also we discussed with the outreach office, and also we discussed with the international relations office. The first discussion was what was the barriers and the challenging or the obstacles that not bring Al-Bashir to the court until now, because the crime committed 20 years ago, and until now there's nothing happened. One thing, the other thing we discussed also, the Koshier case that's going on, is there enough evidence for that? And the first crime that committed now in the West Darfur and in the Khartoum.
Speaking of crimes that are going on right now, civilians are still being attacked in Darfur. Yesterday, Tuesday, we reported that 39 people were killed by shelling in Niana. And you mentioned that you discussed the ongoing trial of Ali Kosheb with ICC officials. Tell me about that discussion and what they're saying, because I know the Office of the Prosecutor announced in their briefing to the UN Security Council that they're launching an investigation into crimes in Darfur that are going on right now. What is the update?
Yeah, your first question was, you said the crime is committing in Darfur right now. Yes, the crime has been committing since April. When the war started, the crime committed everywhere in Sudan. But we actually are very concerned about West Darfur and the Niana, Kutum, and all this, the Ninja, and all this area. There is a big challenge. And then there is some case of the rape and the killing in Khartoum as well. So this is really concern the diaspora network, and we discussed with the court this, and the court assure us that they are going to open a case or investigate this issue with the court. The other point that you said is Ali Kosheb. The Ali Kosheb case, yes, we discussed with the court this issue, and the prosecutor office said that they are very satisfied with the evidence that they have. They don't need more evidence right now from us or from any organization until they hear from the defense office. So we are actually happy and glad that the prosecutor office satisfied with the evidence that prosecutor Ali Kosheb with the war crime.
You are the director of the Darfur Diaspora Association in the UK. What is the UK diaspora doing to help achieve justice for crimes against civilians in Darfur? How can you help, and what are you doing?
Actually, we ourselves are the be a survivor of the genocide and the war crime in the Darfur. So we ourselves are the victim of that one. We actually charities are registered in the UK and to pursue that case of the Darfur. We're presenting more than 30,000 in the UK here, and also we have the millions of our people, the genocide survivor, and there, some of them have been killed, about 300,000 have been killed. We are actually represent them to the court, and we want to achieve justice on behalf of them. We are actually sent. We would like to send from your radio a strong message to or the kind message to the international community, including UK, UN, and the United States, and all the country, to stand with the Darfur people and to support the court to achieve the justice to our people. That we want, and that we try to achieve, and that we are going to achieve. That's our aim to achieve.
That's Abdullah Idris, the director of the Darfur Diaspora Association in the United Kingdom. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio this past hour. A traditional court in South Sudan's Unity State has sentenced two armed young men to 1 year in prison for allegedly robbing belongings of returnees last week. The commissioner of Gwid County says the verdict could deter other young men from committing similar crimes in future. For VOA News, Ruth Nyak Jok reports from Bantu.
Local leaders in Unity State says armed young men robbed families who were on their way from Bantu Town to Gwid County. Authority alleged that the armed young men looted the returnees' belongings, including clothes. Gwid County Commissioner George Kawaisan say the two harmed young men who flee guilty to charge will face the law.
They looted some properties from the civilian who came to Khartoum. All those properties have been returned back to the rightful owners.
Commissioner Kawai warned young men in his county against committing crime and urged them to allow the returnees to integrate into the local communities. Some returnees who fled the conflict in Sudan say they suffered a similar incident along the way during their journey to South Sudan, follow the outbreak of the violence in Sudan in mid-April. Dwalkar would say he and others' families arrived from South Sudan immediately ended after armed men took their belongings at a gunpoint.
When we came, our properties which we have were all looted. Those were things we could sell and help ourselves with.
Another returnees, Tungar Kuo, who arrived from Sudan a month ago, say he faced several challenges after fleeing the ongoing violence in Sudan.
When we reached the middle, the way we were being treated was very bad. Even our properties were looted. Everyone was having his things that they could help ourselves with. All were looted and they were taken by the army.
Some returnees say they are happy to be back in South Sudan despite some of the problems they face encountering during their journey to United States. Yalamfar, a mother of seven children, alleged that some of the Sudanese armed men whose identity are not being known abuse some South Sudanese women fleeing the violence in Sudan.
The women were being raped on the road 24. That is the reason why we change from land to river to transportation. They were raped by the Arab who are staying in the bush.
Feltoud, who also escaped the violence in Sudan, appealed to United States residents to be nigh to returnees who suffered a lot from the side effect of the conflict in Sudan.
We were mistreated there in Sudan. We are encouraging people that the way you accommodated us according to your capacity, you should look into ways to prevent our children from getting involved in criminality. After they left Sudan, please, you look at the necessary way for them to behave in real life.
The returnees are urging the South Sudanese authority to provide security, food, and other basic needs to the family resettling in various parts of the country. For BOA News, I'm Lee Nyajua in Bantu, United States.
Some South Sudanese are expressing mixed views about the performance of their national basketball team in Philippines. The Eagles of Serbia earlier today defeated the Bright Stars 115 points to 83 points at the Smart Arneta Colosseum in Quezon. Charlton Doki reports on how and why the mood in Juba is that of mourning.
Serbia and Puerto Rico have qualified for the second round of the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2023, while China and South Sudan have been eliminated from the games. Serbia's Eagles beat South Sudan's Bright Stars by 115 points to 83 points at the Smart Araneta Coliseum in Quezon City in the Philippines on Wednesday. Serbia's Eagles, who are three-time Eurobasketball champions, dominated South Sudan's Bright Stars, who are participating in the FIBA World Cup for the first time. Despite South Sudan's Wednesday defeat, Winston Mayom Ayik, a South Sudanese who resides in the Kenyan capital Nairobi, says the Bright Stars made him and the country proud.
Generally, our team did so well in terms of consistency and how they have been conducting themselves so far. And I think it's just that they just met a very strong team, and even if they lost, I think we're so happy as South Sudan, because that has put us in a very good position in the World Cup, and I think next time we'll do better than this.
Jacob Bull, another South Sudanese who resides in Nairobi, says the Bright Stars lost Wednesday's game because of mental pressure. But Bull adds that the Bright Stars tried their best.
We all know it's a team that was just won. Playing against an experienced team like Serbia was a challenge that was worth it, and they have tried their best getting into the game. They have put us into the world stage. It was a competitive game. The group itself had experienced players, so I think it went well.
Harriet Obi, who resides in the capital Juba, says she was disappointed to see the Bright Stars trailing behind Serbia. She says she is hopeful the team will do better next time.
I really feel so sad that we lost it this time. But however, we really need to appreciate our players for representing us to the next level. I mean, one level that we became recognized, and we hope we shall win in the nearest future.
The Bright Stars will still participate in the qualifying games for the Paris Olympics, scheduled for July 26, 2024. Another Juba resident, Kerbino Quell, who has been following the FIBA World Cup 2023 games, says he feels bad that South Sudan lost and is out of the competitions.
I feel sad and demoralized that we lost today to Serbia. However, I must say that South Sudan men's basketball team made the country proud because they qualified to the FIBA World Cup for the first time in history. This is amazing, and we have to really be proud of them. Despite our today's loss, we are proud of the team for their performance. They have united the country, and with this, we can really go further as a nation.
A Juba-based sports journalist, Danson Machek, says despite of today's loss, he is proud of the team's performance. He says qualifying for the FIBA World Cup 2023 is a great achievement for South Sudan's Bright Stars.
That is a big step, and that is a big statement that we have given people. Our basketball is coming bigger, and we will come back stronger and better. So I am very proud that the South Sudan national team have really represented us, and there is no doubt we will be in the airport to welcome them when they come back from Manila.
In another Group B game, Puerto Rico beat China 107 points to 89 points, securing a slot in the second round. Group B victors, Puerto Rico and Serbia, will face Italy and the Dominican Republic to get to the quarterfinals. South Sudan and four other African countries did not qualify for the second round. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Medical officials in Omdurman say they are running out of supplies and more people are dying. Find out more after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As Sudan faces the challenges of ongoing conflict, its healthcare system is on the verge of collapse. Project Hope, in partnership with the Sudanese American Physicians Association, has taken a step to provide essential medical supplies to Al-Nou Hospital, a beacon of hope in the city of Omdurman. Nabil Biagio spoke with Chesa Latifi, Deputy Director for Emergency Preparedness and Response with the global charity Project Hope. She describes a collapsing healthcare system in Sudan.
There are currently 11 million people inside Sudan that are in need of healthcare. And what it seems is happening is that most healthcare facilities are no longer operating, and that's due to lack of staff. It's due to lack of supplies and pharmaceuticals, and also due to security. And so there's this huge gap in healthcare, and we're talking not only about healthcare for trauma-related injuries, but for standard maternal and child and obstetric care, but also for chronic illness and disease.
The press statement you put out mentions that hospitals in Sudan are struggling to function due to armed group takeovers. Could you elaborate on the impact this has on patients and medical personnel?
Yeah, well, the problem is that people just can't access healthcare facilities, and as the violence increases, the opportunity or the availability of healthcare gets farther and farther away. And so the hospitals that are still functioning, so when we're thinking about El Nou Hospital in Omdurman, which is a city adjacent to Khartoum, this is one of the only somewhat fully functioning hospitals that is in that metropolitan area. And so they are just being flooded with patients. And it's patients that need all sorts of different types of care. But the hospital, even though it is somewhat functional and that they have staff, they are low on supply. They are low on pharmaceuticals. They are low on hygiene items and personal protective equipment. And most of all, their staff are tired and they are overworked, and there doesn't seem to be any break for them in sight.
And I spoke a few weeks ago with one of your doctors at Al-Nou Hospital, Dr. Mukhtar. He told me about armed groups and soldiers coming to the hospital, sometimes blocking access. And in this press statement, you mentioned that Project Hope recently delivered two WHO interagency emergency health kits to Al-Nou Hospital. Could you explain how these kits will address the immediate health needs of patients and medical staff?
Yes, absolutely. So interagency emergency health kits are kits that are designed to provide the medicines and supplies necessary for the primary health care needs of 10,000 people for 3 months. And we were able, with our partner, the Sudanese American Physicians Association, deliver two of those kits through Port of Sudan and then down through Omdurman to El Nou Hospital. And so these supplies are going to be able to provide some really critical support for the patients there. And it was a very tricky situation. Our driver had been held up due to the conflict, and it took longer than we expected, and there was a lot of challenges on the way, but we were so pleased and happy that we were able to get those much-needed items into Omdurman, into El Nou Hospital.
Given the persisting challenges, what are the key ways in which the international community can contribute to addressing the health crisis in Sudan?
It really seems that the international community is just not paying attention to what's happening in Sudan. And it's been weeks since some major U.S. news outlets have reported on it. And I think that just the general population, especially in the United States and even some of Europe, has no idea what is happening there. When Darfur happened, everybody said, no, not again, but it's happening again. And there are many people people dying. There's going to be millions of people that are going to be starving within the next 6 months. There are 4.2 million women and girls that are at risk of gender-based violence like rape. And we need to pay attention. The humanitarian efforts need to be funded by the international community, by donors. We just can't let this slip off the radar. We just can't ignore it. It is a huge, huge humanitarian health crisis.
That's Jessa Latifi, Deputy Director for Emergency Preparedness and Response with Project Hope. She spoke with Nabil Biagio from the U.S. city of Los Angeles this past hour. Allegations of crimes against humanity continue to surface from Western Darfur. In one refugee camp on Chad's border with Sudan, VOA spoke to widows who claim ethnic militia are targeting men for ethnic cleansing.
Hundreds of thousands have fled in recent weeks from Sudan's Darfur region to this refugee site in the Chadian border town of Adrey. Women and children are here in great numbers, but the relative absence of men is striking. Refugees and rights groups say men are being disproportionately targeted by ethnic Arab militias in Darfur that are alleged to be carrying out atrocities against civilians. One woman who lost her husband to the fighting 3 months ago told VOA she had to flee barefoot to Chad with her children after her home and everything in it was destroyed by the militias. Marwa Karmis Adam Ali says her children are very young and don't know that their father has been killed. She tells them that their father is going to return one day soon.
My children are very young and they don't know anything about what happened to their father. I reassure them that he's going to be returning soon.
The family has nowhere to go other than a tiny shelter. At this water collection point, in less than 5 minutes of speaking to various women, eight came forward to say they had been widowed by the fighting in recent weeks. Gamra Adam Jem now sells vegetables to make ends meet and says life without her husband is difficult. She says they killed her husband right in front of her. She was sitting next to him when the militia shot him in the head.
They killed my husband. We were sitting together and they just killed him, shooting him in the head.
Asked if Human Rights Watch has observed the targeting of men in Darfur, Mohamed Osman, a researcher who recently returned from Chad, said,
I mean, the trend speaks very clearly to the evidence we found is how men were overwhelmingly being targeted. And part of it is because some of them were fighters, but also some of it is the perception of them being a fighting force. Even including in the trip that people, you know, when people fled, there has been targeting for men also on the road.
Asked what the government of Sudan is doing to protect civilians in Darfur, Gaddafi Abdallah Mohamed Ali, the Sudanese special consul to the nearby Chadian town of Abachay, called the Arab militias and paramilitary forces in Darfur a vast insurgency. He says the government of Sudan and its armed forces are carrying out their duty to defend Sudan, calling it a battle of dignity against the vast insurgency.
The government of Sudan and the Sudanese armed forces are carrying out their duty to repel and defend Sudan in this battle, which is a battle of dignity against this vast insurgency.
For the widows in Adrey, the outlook is desperate with their family's breadwinners gone. But for some, things look set to get even more difficult. Kultham Adam Zakaria Bada says she managed to escape with her seven children and a group of other people who lived on her street.
We managed to escape along with other women and people from the street, but I have seven children.
She adds she is 6 months pregnant with her late husband's child. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adrey, Chad.
From Chad, we move to Gabon, where the military announced a takeover, and it has ignited debates on the future of the six-member Central African Economic Bloc, CEMAC, which has some of the world's longest-serving leaders and a long history of military takeovers. For VOA News, Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Ce jour, 30 août 2023, nous...
Several dozen youths, a majority of them students from the University of Yaoundé,
watch attentively as soldiers declare on Gabonese TV that the military, united in a transitional committee, is putting an end to the leadership of President Ali Bongo. The 64-year-old Bongo has ruled Gabon, an oil-producing nation, since succeeding his father, Omar Bongo, who died in 2009 after 42 years in power. Gabon held elections on August 26 with Ali Bongo running for re-election. But contested results indicate 69-year-old Albert Ondo Osa, a former minister and university professor, won the poll. Ondo said Ali Bongo wanted to steal his victory. Anong Jacob is a secondary school teacher in Yaoundé. He says post-election confusion in Gabon has given the military an opportunity to seize power, claiming that they want freedom for civilians, just like the militaries of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali.
It's a shared feeling with those in Niger who are thinking at the moment that the time is now or never. They have all the resources, gold, diamond, timber, and all of that, but we don't have any of the industries or factories that can process this material. All is transported to the West. We have little or nothing to benefit from it.
Gabon is a member of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, an economic bloc that has some of the world's longest-serving leaders. 81-year-old President Teodora Obiang-Nguema of Equatorial Guinea won elections for a sixth term in 2022. Obiang came to power in a 1979 military coup and is the world's longest-serving head of state. In the Republic of Congo, 80-year-old Denis Sassou Nguesso has been president for all but five of the last 44 years. And in Cameroon, 90-year-old Paul Biya has been the president for 41 years since 1982. Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra hasn't been around as long, but recently extended the presidential term from 5 to 7 years and did away with the two-term limit for presidents. The CAR opposition says Touadéra created a life presidency for himself. Lange Nga Derek, lecturer at the International Relations Institute of Cameroon, says these leaders' desire to hang on to power is causing systematic problems and widespread frustration.
Something has to be done, especially in French tropical Africa, ex-French colonies particularly, where egoistic interests frustrate most of the youth. You come out from the university, policies do not favor your integration into the system and help your nation, especially in some of these Francophone African countries.
Nga said if the opposition in French-speaking Central African countries remains fragmented and leaders keep their strong grip on power, the trend of militaries taking power, as happened in Gabon Wednesday, may spread even further. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
That's
Cameroon.
All we prepared for you this Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. When I'll leave you with Justin Simpleman and the song One in a Million.
Wayamu makuri ngwa awinyu kuruma kekendali Wayamu makuri ngwa awinyu kuruma kekendali Ibaru ya kwiji kwiji kuri lengine kiburi kekembada Ibaru ya kwiji kwiji.
We've been listening to Justin Simpleman and the song You Are One in a Million. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to voafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, David Greensburg, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank you.